On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Well, welcome to On the Bookshelf. And today, even though it is the Advent season leading up to Christmas, we have a book that does not have Christmas in the title or even Jesus in the title. It's a book of stories. I think that what I liked most about this book is that these are stories that are deep stories and they make you think, and that's never a bad thing. To talk to us today about his new book is Dr. Samuel Blumenthal. The book is Once Upon a Time, a collection of short stories for those trying to find their way home. It's from Redemption Press. Sam has a marvelous story. We're going to talk about him and we're going to talk about these stories in the book. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you for having me.
I find this very interesting. You came from a Jewish background, and you are what some of my friends would call a completed Jew, or a Messianic Jew. Do you want to tell us about your story, how you came to see Christ as your Savior?
I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, grew up here, Reform Jewish, which means a lot of the rules have been kind of relaxed to the point to where the services are more English than they are Hebrew. The temple doesn't really expect you to keep kosher, which is really a big deal, having completely different dishes and silverware and stuff for milk and meat and dairy, because you cannot mix the two and all those kinds of things. What happened too, I think, over the years, I became a Christian in 2000, the spring of 2000, when I was 45. So I'm like, that was just over 23 years ago. And since I've been a Christian, I realized kind of the same thing has happened in the church. The church has become more liberal over time. Today, probably 90%+ of the Jews in this country, and also 90%+ of the Jews in Israel, and that's about 80% of all the Jews in the world. Really, Reform, or whatever you want to call it, the traditions are important. They may go to temple in Israel. Zionism is really important, the political entity, but they really don't believe in the God of the Bible anymore. And most people would even tell you that. It's just gone. So very sad, but that's kind of how I grew up. They're a tradition, kind of like people who are Catholics and more liberal. The traditions are important. Going to Mass is more important, but it's just that. It's not really belief anymore. Short story on how I came to faith. I've been married twice. I have three sons from my first wife, and we were divorced after 19 years. And then a second wife who actually was Christian, but struggling in her faith somewhat. And then our relationship was just very, very hard, very challenging. And the short story is that it just really brought me to my knees and eventually brought me to faith. I was not looking for God. I was a psychologist for over 30 years, so I really thought a lot in Freudian at that, thought a lot about deeper things, about unconscious motivation, which is actually something Jesus talks a whole lot about
right.
in the New Testament, and divided hearts and mixed motives and all kinds of things. But yeah, that's kind of how it happened. Ultimately, my second wife and I, our marriage didn't make it. But in the midst of that, which I was very sad about, but I came to faith in the middle of that. And looking back, there's no way I would have ever come to faith if it had not been just as hard as it was and just as difficult. So
these stories that are in your book, Once Upon a Time, a collection of short stories for those trying to find their way home, they are not overtly religious. There's not a lot of Jesus talk in them, but it kind of reminds me, if you will, of the book of Esther. Esther has no mention of the Lord whatsoever, but his fingerprints are all over the book. We can see God at work behind the scenes in the book of Esther. So it seems to me that these stories are the kind of stories that make people who wouldn't necessarily pick up a book that had anything to do with God would pick up the book and say, collection of short stories, Once Upon a Time. Well, that might be fun. And start to read it and find themselves reading some things that made them really think deeply about life. And I'm figuring that was your intent.
Well, it was. Just two things. God used stories in my life. Matter of fact, when I first came to faith, I had a dream. Dreams are made up of stories, but the dream was also connected to a movie I had just seen, which is a whole nother story, very, very rich and deep. And it was through that, it's too long to tell right now, but that was kind of how I came to faith. I had another kind of repetitive dream that God used later in my spiritual life. He began to use sequences and parts of stories from the Chronicles of Narnia early in my Christian life, and then I just kind of became very interested in stories in general. I'm more of a contemporary guy and a movie watcher more than an old book reader. I like to read now, but I still tend to watch more movies. And God just convicted me a while back that His story has essentially made its way into most stories.
Yes.
And I've never heard really anybody say it quite that way. There are a number of people who, and one gentleman I actually found who wrote a really, really good book on the basic plots and stories. You know, a number of people have said, well, there's really only four or five basic plots and like all the stories ever written. This gentleman kind of felt there were seven. They're all kind of related. But, you know, the great majority of people who write stories are not Christians or people who believe in God. And I've kind of been on a mission the last 15 years, 20 years, you know, to like test out this hypothesis and like look at every story I can find, every movie. And it's just amazing and I think Tim Keller and some others were the first to start talking about the gospel. It's kind of like a four-chapter story. They call it the four-chapter gospel. There's creation, then there's the fall, then there's redemption, which God was always trying to work redemptively with his people, but that really came to the fore with Jesus. And then restoration, the very end of times, he's just going to fix it all. It's going to kind of come full circle and be like the garden again before the fall. And so that kind of four-chapter story, most of the stories, you know, none of us knew what the garden was, but like C.S. Lewis said, it's almost like we hear echoes of it or smell scents of it. It's almost like we knew it, but we forgot,
right,
in a way. We have a sense of what it should be because God made us his image bearers, and we kind of have a sense of what our hearts would be without sin. But for most of us, we've been, you know, fallen the whole time we've been alive. and so that's kind of the second chapter. And most stories and movies, if you even think about them, the great, great many start out with the character who is either already in crisis or in the midst of getting ready to fall into a great crisis. And it's always about sin, although people don't like to call it that. And then one way or another, God redemptively begins to work in this person's life. And, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge is probably the most classic example. But at the end of the movie, the person is a much kinder and gentler version of themselves through grace, really through the humbling that came because of the crisis that kind of brought them to a revelation of their own selfishness and narcissism. And they kind of acknowledge that. And even though there's no, you know, clear-cut reference to God or the Bible or the Holy Spirit, any of that, it's all there, and it's over and over again. So to me, what's amazing about that is, since most of the people who write these stories don't even believe in God, it's almost as if they know God's story without knowing it.
Right.
And when they start to write the story, what comes out of their heart is God's story, and it's like they don't even know that's what they're writing about. That's what's amazing about it. To me, it's just another greater evidence of the fact that God is who he is, and the story in the Bible is our story.
Yeah, it's in our DNA.
It's like spiritual DNA, you know. Yeah. God, you know, he made us with his image, and I think part of that image is this spiritual imprint. And to me, and I really believe that it's like we all know the real story unconsciously.
Yeah.
Some of us, by God's grace, thank God, we wake up and we realize consciously, oh, wow, that's the story. Now it all makes sense why I struggle with sin the way I do and how it's so much bigger than me. And only with God's help and the Holy Spirit will I even have a fighting chance about this. And there's this you know, the beginning of the story that I wasn't there, but it makes sense that's how it started. And it makes sense how it's going to end one day, too. And so the stories, you know, some of them I started out and some of them have aspects of like, well, what was the garden like before the fall? What could it have been like? And so the first story is a story about a young couple, and their love for each other, and you know, which was pure and innocent. But it's really supposed to be a representation of what God's love was for us, for each of us, in the garden before the fall.
Right.
The stories are they're different representations of some piece or pieces of. Yeah, what people call the four chapter gospel, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after all, Jesus, when he walked among us, told stories. He didn't have religious diatribes. He didn't give sermons, so to speak. He told stories. And I think I was a bivocational Methodist pastor for 29 years, and over time, I began to realize that the best thing I could do, rather than write religious lectures, which I fought the urge to do, the best thing I thought was to come up with a way to share the big story by starting out with smaller portions of the story and becoming a storyteller to emulate the way that Jesus spoke, so that you would connect with people, and before they knew it, here you are in this conversation. And to me, this is exactly what you're doing in this book. The young love, that's the one that it's Adam and Eve before the fall. Nowhere man. This is an extraordinary story. I think there are a lot of college and youth groups that could do really well by just having them all sit around in a circle and somebody read the story to them and then pray and leave, because it's a really beautiful way of saying, what would it be like if Jesus took on a persona and deliberately lowered himself to being among the lowest of the low? And 2,000 years ago, that was a carpenter's assistant in a place that didn't have a whole lot of wood to work with, so he ends up being a stonemason and everything else. He learned all these things. He would have been a rough and tumble guy. If he came today, what if he was homeless? What if he just looked like another guy living on the streets and people would kind of scoot around him because they weren't sure how clean he was or if he was crazy or dangerous? And instead, he's just somebody that loves people, reaches out and touches them emotionally and spiritually in ways that they didn't really see coming. For me as a Christian, it's obvious that where nowhere man got his motivation, and if he is really Jesus or not, we leave that up to the reader. And I really do like all of the stories in here, but that one just really kind of took my breath away.
Thank you for that. It's almost comical how somebody can talk about ourselves or even some constructive criticism or maybe a little bit harsher than that, and how hard it is for us to listen to it and how defensive we get so quickly. And, you know, hopefully some of us have made some strides with God's help in that area, but when we hear a story, it's like our defenses relax, you know. And Jesus knew that, like you said. I mean, he taught most of his greatest lessons using stories. Now his symbolism was so deep and stuff that the disciples are still there scratching their heads, you know, not knowing what it meant. But it, and especially when it was directed to somebody in particular. Or Nathan with David is even a better example. You know, it's like, you know, David will not admit, you know, that he was an adulterer and a murderer for the better part of a year. But Nathan tells him the story, and he's incensed that this guy needs to be accountable, you know.
Yes.
And that's all it took, you know, and for Nathan to say, "You are the man," you know. But he received it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, now, the story that it's entitled "A Story for Myself" is about a brokenhearted man. Is this a little autobiographical, or was this just a starting out place? Like, I know what it's like to be, you know, busted up.
Yeah, Parts of it, not the whole story. Actually, I've become a crazy bluegrass music guy in the last 10 years. And there is a bluegrass song called Man in the Mirror. And it would be entitled Man in the Mirror, but it's impossible to get permission to use lyrics.
Right.
You can mention the song, you can talk about it, but to quote lyrics from a song, it's just impossible to get permission. So it was originally called Man in the Mirror. It'd be nice to use a few sentences of lyrics because they really tell the whole story. You know, it's like, what happened? She just walked out, you know, and I don't even, you know, I wasn't anticipating it. And she didn't give me any reasons at all. And it's like, and people start calling. And it's like he's making up lies, you know, to begin with, you know, hoping that she's going to come back and he won't have to tell anybody the truth. But then he just finally says, you know, I'm making up stories for other people, but I really need a story to tell myself. Yeah, it was inspired by that. But yeah, a lot of us have been brokenhearted before and sometimes really brokenhearted, you know, and it was really a story about that. But then it gave me the opportunity. I really think, you know, we talk about God's love, you know, it being unconditional and all that. To me, the word fidelity is very powerful, that it's God's faithfulness and his undying faithfulness and his complete fidelity. And so in a deeper way, the story is really about that. And it kind of gets around to that eventually. The protagonist in the movie, in the story, you know, they go to this movie and it's really a war movie. But the issue is loyalty to the end, which is what his wife was failed so miserably at. And that, you know, that was really the greater message.
In case you're joining us really late, folks, we're talking to Dr. Samuel Blumenthal, who is the author of a wonderful new book, Once Upon a Time, A Collection of Short Stories for Those Trying to Find Their Way Home. It's from Redemption Press, available online and in bookstores everywhere. It is not a overtly Christmas book or even an overtly Christian book, but you can find God's fingerprints all through it. There's one story called Unless You Turn that has to do with kind of a misanthropic kind of fellow that lives out by himself, and he does a kindness. It even surprises him that he's doing. I found this a most interesting story.
Yeah, so a lot of my stories have been partially inspired by this or that. This was partially inspired by a movie with Robert Duvall called Get Low, in which same time frame, like maybe 20s or the 30s, back in the woods, miserable old guy. And then I just changed it from there. There's no other kind of similarity to that movie, but that kind of gave me the basic idea. And the title comes, you know, from the verses, you know, a couple of verses Jesus had about children. There's one in Matthew 18, I think 3 and 4. He says, you know, you will not be able to enter the kingdom of heaven unless you turn and become like children. And in some versions, it's translated like converted back into a child. And so there's this idea of, yeah, I mean, children are little sinners just like we are, but there's something, there is this innocence in childhood, this tendency to believe in God that as you mature and as you become an adult, that somehow you lose. So the story was he meets this little boy who is intellectually challenged as well, but that's, you know, that's not what gives a person their value at all. He's even more innocent than most, and it just deeply touches the man, you know, who had a lot of things go wrong in his life and just had gotten stuck and being bitter, you know, for the last 3 or 4 decades. And then he forgot too. He was actually getting ready to end his life when this boy accidentally kind of shows up on his doorstep. Although it was, I think, Albert Einstein that said that coincidences are God's way of being anonymous.
Yeah. I also like a very intense story called A More Quiet Mind. And this has themes of mental issues, of great loss, of friendship, of restoration. This is a really deep and intense story, but it has a very powerful message to people that are suffering and those that struggle with mental issues or that think that therefore their life is not worth living and they get clinically depressed and so forth. This is just, I wondered if it came out of your previous career as a psychologist. I'm not going to ask if you worked with somebody who's like this. Obviously, we can't talk about that. But it just seems like it has such a compassionate feel to it that if there were somebody who was in this situation, this is the way that we should deal with them.
Yeah, it came from a number of places. I was, as a psychologist, I evaluated, did inpatient work, mostly outpatient, but did evaluate and see a lot of people that were very, very disturbed, schizophrenic people, and especially the more chronic ones. It's just very, very sad. It's just one of those things that very rarely do people, really get much better or get to a much better place with it, and so that was part of it. I tell you, the only person I know for sure that was schizophrenic who seems completely healed and was completely healed by the hand of God is, strangely enough, the serial murderer David Berkowitz in New York City. In New York, and the only reason I know that is because Focus on the Family had him on the radio a number of years ago. He's in prison. He will be for the rest of his life, but he's got a prison ministry. And he didn't know God. He was actually Jewish himself, but not religious, and just got down on his hands and knees one night. He was clearly schizophrenic, just really crazy. And God healed him. And to listen to him talk, which they had an interview that went on for at least an hour or longer, maybe an hour and a half, schizophrenic people just cannot keep their train of thought going. They just can't. Their thinking is disorganized. And he was as sane as anybody I've ever heard. I mean, it was just a miracle. And, what he did was terrible, and he feels as bad about it as he could, but he was very, very disturbed at the time. And God healed him. And other than that, I have never really seen a situation, where God put his hand on somebody and just healed it in that way. And I wanted to write about it. It ultimately becomes a story about this young man who really puts himself out for the person, who is in such a bad way.
Yes.
And it's ultimately his loyalty and his dedication that kind of break through, I think, really more than anything else. So it was, in a way, kind of being Jesus for this man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, once again, these are stories that don't say that they're about God, but they really are. And they're about being people who follow God and who love God and are trying to understand how in the world we can be his hands and feet, how we can love others and care about them. These stories are really remarkable, and there's several others that are really powerful. Before All the Streets Were Paved, that's about becoming a neighbor. Everybody's favorite. This is a story about a beautiful girl who is so pretty that even from childhood, people are just stunned by how attractive she is. But that becomes the only thing that they think about of her. That this is the only thing she's got going. It's just, she's just extraordinarily attractive. And how she deals with that and how she finds a way through to avoid becoming vain and useless in life and to become a real human being, a fully functional human being. It's a great story.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that one, too, was, she never really cared for all the attention, but as a little child, and it's just hard not to respond to it. But, yeah, she's not just very attractive. She was really like a supermodel, and but ultimately, yeah, just didn't really care about it. Ultimately, that one became a little bit, you know, there's just so much pressure put on girls and young women in Western society, and eating disorders, you know, having just gotten out of control. And it's all about that. It's all about, you know, valuing what the superficial, what you look like, how skinny you are, how pretty you are. And it's just, you know, it's a place of bondage for a lot of young women. So the story kind of became a way to kind of reveal that and to kind of redeem some of that.
Well, it's just a marvelous story in a book full of marvelous stories called Once Upon a Time, a collection of short stories for those trying to find their way home. It's from Redemption Press, and it's written by Sam Blumenthal, who is our guest today on the bookshelf. Sam, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss that I neglected to ask you?
I don't think so. I just thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor.
The honor is all mine, Sam. Thank you very much. And I'm glad that you have been my brother in Christ all these years. And I look forward, if we don't get to see each other in this lifetime, I look forward to seeing you in heaven. Do you have a website people could go to for more information?
Anything? It's just Samuel Blumenthal, S-A-M-U-E-L, Blumenthal, BLUMENTHAL.com. There's a website. There's also a newsletter I'm doing. You can sign up for the newsletter. It's twice a month. Don't want to overwhelm anybody, but just talking about stories and the significance of stories. So you can sign up for that there on the website.
Excellent. Sam, thank you very much. This has been a great honor to read your book and a great honor to get a chance to talk to you. And may I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Well, you too. Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Dr. Samuel Blumenthal, the author of Once Upon a Time, a collection of short stories for those trying to find their way home, from Redemption Press. Check his website, samuelblumenthal.com. And we hope you'll join us again next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast. Until then, this is your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.